This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is basically a pair of ones, or exactly a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs or duos. We are talking about ladies who were part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts, and we are just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends, having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email, and we will all continue learning.
This week, we will be talking about Clara Driscoll, an artist and furniture designer who created iconic lamps for Tiffany Studios, played an iconic role in the Art Nouveau movement, and was the head of the Tiffany Studios Women's Glass Cutting Department, aka the Tiffany Girls. I'm Jessica Rogers, honoring the day the Apollo 11 took off on this day, and I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey girl, hey, I'm Lizzie Rahr, having no desire to go to space, coming to you from San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjini Rivas, coming to you from Space City, Houston, Texas.
Woo! All right, so before we begin, I want to give a shout out to an early friend to the show and writer of an incredible resource that we use, author Anna M. Lewis.
Yay, Anna! We love using Anna's book when we can for research on our episodes. Her book, Women of Steel and Stone, highlights several architects, engineers, and landscape architects. It is a great resource of amazing ladies.
Yes. So we follow each other on Instagram. So it was actually an Instagram story that Anna posted that put the bug in my ear about Clara. So here we are.
Ooh, that's great. I love that Anna continues to highlight more and more ladies.
Yes. Can't wait to hear about this lady.
Yes. The Instagram story, it was a small clip that she shared, and I instantly knew that I wanted to do a story on her. So let's begin. Our story starts on December 16, 1861, in Tallmadge, Ohio, a rural area of Summit County, known today like the Akron area of Ohio. Eliza V. Wolcott and Fanny Pierce were to give birth to Clara Pierce Wolcott. Clara would be the eldest of four. all girls.
Welcome to the world, Clara. I love an older sister story.
Yes, we carry so much on our shoulders.
We do.
Anyway, so if there are any listeners that live in Talmadge or in the Summit area or near the Akron area, if you see the town hall, that was the place that Clara's parents would meet when at the time it was a school called Talmadge Academy. So Eliza and Fanny would meet there and later go to seminary school because they wanted to become missionaries.
Cute! I like that they met in school and had common goals.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. Sadly, Clara's dad couldn't travel due to a health condition, so the dreams of becoming missionaries couldn't happen. Instead, her dad would become a farmer. So the family would move to Hudson, which is a little further north.
I wonder how far in his studies he got before he got sick and became unable to travel. It's said that their dreams were crushed, but hopefully living on a farm was a new dream and not a last resort sort of situation.
Yeah.
I don't know much about that part, but it seemed like an easier thing for them to do.
Yeah.
However, at the age of 12, Gladys' father passed away unexpectedly. And her mother would become a teacher to support, you know, the daily lives of her and her sisters. And her mother always encouraged her and her sisters to study and to develop their creative interests.
Ugh, how sad that her father passed away when she was so young, but I'm glad the mom kept it going.
I know. Mm-hmm. So sad about her dad, but I'm glad mom found a way to support the family and she like instilled those values in her girls.
So this would lead Clara to move to Cleveland to live with relatives to attend an art program at Central High School. And then after high school, she would go to the Western Reserve School of Design for Women, known today as the Cleveland Institute of Art in Ohio. There, she would study drawing and design.
How cool that she went there. Let's talk about this place. The school began in 1882 as the Western Reserve School of Design for Women. Like Jessica said, it was established by Sarah Kimball at her home, and classes consisted of one student and one teacher. Eventually, it grew into the well-known school it is today, the Cleveland Institute of Art in Ohio, welcoming all students, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice. I'm sad that she had to leave her family, but I appreciate that she had the initiative to like move in order to pursue her passions.
Yeah. So either while attending school or perhaps it was directly after, Claire would get work as a furniture maker at a local company called C.S. Ransom and Company.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of Ransom as a last name, though. Sorry, that's neither here nor there. I'm glad that Clara was working in the 1800s.
There's a private school in Miami called Ransom.
Yeah.
So just, and it's named after a Ransom family. Anyway. Okay, so at the age of 27 in 1888, Clara moved to New York City to study at the Metropolitan Art School. There, she got a job at the Tiffany Glass Company, which was run by Louis Comfort Tiffany.
As in Tiffany?
Yes, but it's before the Tiffany as we know it.
Ooh, I'm intrigued. Also, I'm surprised it's like a guy whose last name is Tiffany. I always thought it was a lady named Tiffany. Oh.
No, Janine's learning, Rance.
It's like how Victoria's Secret is owned by, like, was started by a man.
Weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not if you know why he started it.
Well, you're right.
It was to buy lingerie for his mistresses.
Anyway.
Okay. So it is the Tiffany and Company family that we're talking about, right? And eventually, Louis Comfort Tiffany would run Tiffany and Company after his father passed away. But at this time, Louis had started his own company separate from Tiffany and Co. called Tiffany Glass Company, which eventually became Tiffany Studios. Louis was an artist and designer known for stained glass.
Ooh, what a surprise that we would get a little history on Tiffany on this episode. I feel like we should be having breakfast or wearing a little black dress.
Uh-oh.
Where's my little blue box with the ring? So, the Tiffany Glass Company. This was a renowned glass company responsible for a lot of lamps and mosaic windows, I would say that he was perhaps Clara's first collaboration with Lewis, but I'll explain that later. I do want to talk about Mr. Lewis.
Do tell.
Here comes some tea.
Yes, from our Tiffany glass cups. Okay, so here are some of the key points about how this man ran his company. First, women and men employees were separated. And they were separated by their gender and the work that they did. The women would cut, measure, and select the different colored glass, send them to another building where the men would take those pieces and assemble all of them together. Fact, or point two, Lewis only hired unmarried men and women, which was pretty common if you think about it in terms of the unmarried women, but uncommon for the men. But I kind of like it. It's all kind of equal between the two, like just single people. Anyway, point number three. Clara was getting paid $20 a week, which today would roughly be like $5,000 a week. Now, that fact, I believe, has to be at the height of her career. But yeah, homegirl was making bank, which I'll also talk about later.
Oh, snap. Way to go, Clara.
Yeah.
Okay, but these are all very interesting specifications for his company.
Yeah.
I agree with you about the unmarried men piece. Like, if you have that rule for women, it should go to men as well. So I guess that's slightly better, but albeit strange.
Yeah.
Like, why no married folks at all? But I also, like, wonder why the separation of them, the genders and, like, the duties. I don't know. It's all just very odd.
Yes.
Yeah. Very discriminatory, if you ask me. But I wonder if he didn't like people that had family duties and he wanted people who possibly their only major responsibility was their job.
Sure.
And so for me, it's not surprised that he kept the sexes separate, because if he mixed them, they might do all sorts of ridiculous things like date.
Oh, he doesn't want any meet cutes. No. Any work meet cutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No hanky panky. All right. So back to his rule about only hiring unmarried people. So in 1889, Clara finds a fella and gets married, and she has to leave Tiffany's.
Oh, no.
You see?
I mean, congrats on her marriage, but bummer that she has to leave such a lucrative job.
It was bound to happen at some point.
I mean, I guess, but keep it a secret.
Well, I'm sure that Lewis was used to that situation.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So our story doesn't end there, because we are on, Najdi, how much does it say we've recorded?
13 minutes.
So we are only like 13 minutes or so. So let's give the 2 seconds to Clara's first husband. In 1889, Clara married Francis Driscoll, who was 30 years older than Clara. Yeah, 3 years later, he died, and Clara went back to work at Tiffany's.
What? Whiplash. 30 years?
Yeah, he was 30 years older than her.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's such whiplash that he died immediately.
Well, yeah.
But I guess the silver lining is she goes back to Tiffany's. But that's such an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
They were barely newlyweds. I mean,
yeah.
Wait, what's newlyweds? Because it was 3 years.
I feel like I'm still in my newlywed phase, and I'm about to be 5 years married.
Okay.
Well, they never got to the 7-year itch or anything, because it was the 30-year death.
Oh my gosh. All right. Like Lizzie said, I'm glad that she went back to work. Now she has a job again. She has money.
All right, so between 1893 and 1896, Clara is working at Tiffany's until she meets and gets engaged to her second husband, Edwin Waldo, who was the head of a charity organization and the brother of a painter.
Hmm. Okay, so she finds love again. Good for her.
This guy sounds interesting.
Yeah, but what does that mean for her job?
She's going to lose it.
Again.
Oh, exactly.
Okay, so I want to talk about Edwin just a little bit, because I just found him to be so fascinating. Okay, so Edwin has this disease that would make him, like, disappear without any recollection.
I told you this guy sounded interesting.
Wait, what? What do you mean disappear? Like, physically? Like, what?
Some doctors called it a form of epilepsy, while other doctors said that he might have, like, a blood clot in his brain. To me, it sounds like a weird sleepwalking type of disease. Okay, so, like, for example, in 1894, Edwin was visiting family in Chicago. He went to church, and then 10 days later, no one had heard from him, and he ends up in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, I'm still confused by this, but I'm taking it as, like, the disappearing means, like, he wanders off for long periods of time and doesn't remember where he is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying? Because, like, I feel like the word disappear...
It's like a magician.
That could mean a lot of things, you know? And so was unclear as to what disease could make someone just disappear.
A chameleon. This sounds to me like some Breaking Bad situation for anyone that's seen the show. You know, if you know, you know. But in all seriousness, how sad for everyone involved. I mean, that must be so scary for them. For Edwin.
Yes.
One day no one knows where he is. It's like so scary.
Good Lord.
Okay, so another incident was in 1897. Edwin and Clara go to her hometown, Talmadge, to visit her side of the family in Ohio, remember? Edwin took a rowboat to Lake Geneva and just never returned.
What?
What do you mean he never returned? Did he drown?
Well, he didn't go back to Clara.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. This is so bizarre. How can we qualify this as a disease, though? I mean, I guess you sort of explained it before, but I don't know. But it seems he's a wanderer, right? But I guess there could be a medical explanation for it, but it just seems like he just wanders off.
They shouldn't have left him alone.
Right? He needs to be supervised at all times.
Yeah.
So it's all like piecemealed of like what happened. So the boat that he was on, the boat would be found sans Edwin, but his vest was left behind. And they seem to have found him in Wisconsin. Yeah. I'm not done there. He like quote unquote disappears again, but is found a week later in Iowa, where he stopped to buy shoes because his shoes were worn out.
Oh.
Based on that, it would suggest that he was on foot from Wisconsin to Iowa. Then he disappears again. And he shows up 5 years later when he wrote a letter to his parents saying that he became a minister at a church in San Francisco. Everyone thought he had died.
No, this is too much. Clara needs an annulment. Enough.
Like right away. Right yeah. away.
Yes.
Okay, but how the heck did he get from Ohio on a landlocked lake to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I mean, unless I did try to look up where Lake Geneva was in Ohio, and I don't know if they were referring to Lake Erie and then it was maybe possible, but like, I don't know. But maybe he just got out on the other side and walked based on the shoe comment, and then he turns south and heads to Iowa. I mean, I cannot. This man can cover some ground.
And then he's in San Francisco.
The part that gets me is that, you know, those shoes weren't comfortable. He was walking from, like, across states and stuff. No son Reebok, ni son Nike. Like, patent leather shoes, you know?
No Nike. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bueno.
Okay, so the other little, like, thing is that his name is Edwin Waldo. And we are constantly asking ourselves, where is Waldo? After the book puzzle game, one of my favorites, by the way, everyone instinctively thinks it's about this guy and his real life story. But sadly, I looked into it. There's no proven connections between Edwin Waldo and the Where's Waldo books.
OMG. Stop. I can't believe that we missed that detail. I can't believe that's his actual name is Waldo and he's disappearing all the time. I wish he was the inspiration. Oh,
yeah. What a missed opportunity. That would have been so good.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I went into like this deep dive about like the Where's Waldo series because I wanted to figure out if it was true. But, you know, Where's Waldo, for those that are just as curious as I was, it was first published in 1980, and it was because this dude liked to draw crowds or whatever. Oh. So missed opportunity. They could have made it historical, but whatever. Anyway, they could have taught people about Edwin Waldo. But anyway, so Clara, she thought that Edwin had died and had no intention of being with some guy that disappears and reappears. So in 1897, or maybe 1898, Clara would go back to working at, you guessed it, the Tiffany Glass Company.
Of course. I mean, if your husband keeps disappearing, then I suppose you can definitely be considered unmarried to keep your job, right? Like,
it's only fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the stints that she's working at Tiffany, she's doing stuff. But in this period of her career, this is really when it started to take off. Also because she wasn't married, so she had more time to actually, you know, work. So she had become the supervisor of the women's department in 1892 before she married this Waldo Cap. So I'm guessing she would have returned to that role after, you know, thinking that her husband died. Now, since the workplace was divided, they would call Clara's section the Tiffany Girls. So in other words, Clara would be the supervisor of the Tiffany Girls.
Interesting. I wish it was Tiffany Women or Tiffany Ladies at a minimum. But I'm happy to hear that Clara worked her way up and she was able to get her job back after the invisible man left her.
Agreed. This is also giving me some Velvet vibes.
Ooh, yes.
So I want to say that Lewis and the other male artists were her collaborators and partners, just as we interact with our subs, you know? Like, I can name a few. Clara would collaborate with Joseph Briggs, who was a glassmaker, and he would execute a lot of her designs.
Oh, that's a cool way to look at it. Or even, like, a contractor with an architect, right? Our designs can't come to life without a good contractor who can, like, execute the design.
True.
And then when I think of collaboration or partners, I also think of how the principal or project manager may collaborate with their designers or drafters. So this makes me imagine how Clara would have worked with her Tiffany Girls. Two ladies came up in my research, Agnes Northrop and Alice Carmen Govey. They were also designers that together would create these stunning windows and decorative panels.
I love the collaboration with other ladies at the company.
Will there be pictures on the show notes?
Yes. So remember, listeners, to check out our show notes. I will share photos of the workspace, which was the Tiffany headquarters located on 25th Street and Park Avenue South in New York City. It still exists today. And then I'll have a few photos of her most notable work, like these Tiffany lamps.
Ooh, I can't wait to see the space and the lamps.
Remember my wedding venue had all those Tiffany lamps? Imagine one of those was from her.
Oh.
That would be great, because it did, looking at those photos.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it reminded me of your wedding, Nergity, because there's this one lamp in particular called the Dragonfly Lamp. And yes, like I said, it reminded me of your wedding venue. All of these decorative lamps. So you see, Tiffany's designs were inspired by nature, featuring intricate floral motifs and vibrant colors. And they're very characteristic of the Art Nouveau aesthetic. And the Dragonfly Lamp was so popular that it won at the 1900 World's Fair exhibition in Paris.
That's so awesome.
Wow. Way to go, Clara.
This totally describes the lamps at my wedding venue. I'm going to proceed with the assumption that Clara was there.
They do. And yes, because your wedding venue was very Art Nouveau style, like the lamps. All right. So what was great about that exhibition is that she was recognized as the designer under the company name, of course. But for her name to be included says a lot if we consider the time.
Yeah, it does. I'm really glad that she was recognized for the work.
Now, this is beyond awesome.
Yes. Okay. So Chica is killing it, right? Now, toward the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that Claire was making $20 a week or $5,000 a week in today's world. Remember that?
Yep.
Yes.
That sounds nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does. So in 1904, New York Daily wrote an article highlighting a handful of women who were making a salary of $10,000.
This feels like a weird article at first. Like, I don't want my salary out there in the world, but maybe it's not that weird today because today we have, like, millionaires lists or high-earning people.
I was going to say the same thing.
High network.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, I get it.
We also put our addresses on phone books and stuff so people can find us. Anyway. Okay, so here is the part of history that they got wrong for a while. They would only acknowledge Clara as this lady boss running shiz, right? But she was a designer, too. The work that the Tiffany Glass Company was known for wasn't giving credit to Clara and her collaborations with the Tiffany Girls and the crafters that she worked with.
Wait, so they weren't? I thought you were just saying that she was getting credit for the designs.
The exception was the lamp in the exhibition in 1900.
Oh.
But yeah, so Clara wasn't getting credited for the rest of her designs. But she was still considered being a boss, which I guess is kind of okay.
Like a manager role.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And a lot of what we know today are from letters. So remember, Clara had three other sisters. No text messages or pop-in group chats existed. So instead, they would write letters. And they called it a round-robin style, which kind of reminds me of like our Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants style, where one person would send a letter, then the person would receive it, write a letter, and send it to another family member. And it continued until they reached the hometown again.
That's so cute. I love that idea.
So do I.
So these letters were considered heirlooms, passed down from generation to generation. And in 1993, a distant cousin had the letters, all 2,000 pages spanning 50 years. And these letters told us what the public didn't know, which was Claire's contributions and the inner workings of the successful company at the time. Historians were able to use those letters to write books about Claire's life and of the Tiffany girls. And now they are at Kent State University.
Yes, what great documentation.
Amazing.
Yes. All right, so back to Clara. So because of these letters, we can credit her with the designing of one of the most famous lamp patterns, including the wisteria, dragonfly, and peony lamps. Clara's talent for design extended beyond lamps to other stained glass pieces.
I cannot wait to see all of this.
So Clara's work at Tiffany Studios was not only artistically significant, but also technologically innovated. She experimented with new glassmaking techniques, including the use of opalescent glass, which gave Tiffany's stained glass a unique and luminous quality. Clara's designs also incorporated innovative methods for creating texture and depth in the glass, such as layering between colors and textures to achieve a three-dimensional effect.
This is so cool. She was like on the cutting edge of this type of design and manufacturing. I'm glad these letters were found so that the true scope of her work was revealed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love learning that she was involved in both the design and technology of these iconic lamps.
Yes. All right. So in 1909, Clara would get married for a third time, which meant that she was done working at Tiffany's at the age of 48.
Wow.
Clara would marry Edward Booth, a British importer and exporter. Y'all, she would actually retire. Like, she moved to Florida. Now, Najdi, she...
What?
Yeah. Now, she didn't play bingo, Najdi, but she did paint silk scarves.
Retire?
Oh.
I mean, good for you, Clara. You paint them scarves.
Yeah, we're proud of you. Okay, I was about to say, like, dude, let that lady do her thing. She's proven her worth. Making an exception for her is not a big deal. But if you tell me that then she had a good retirement plan and she enjoyed a chillaxed life, then I would say Clara had it all figured out.
She was making bank. She can retire at 48.
Yep. That Florida sunshine. And painting scarves. That sounds like fun. Well, in 1944, just shy of her 83rd birthday, Clara would pass away. Her body would be moved back to her hometown where she is buried with relatives in Ohio.
It's nice that she ended up back home with family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did so much. With all the early drama and hiccups, she moved on to be amazing at her craft and an inspiration.
I want to give a special shout out to the podcast Ohio Mysteries, podcast exploring the inexplicable, hosted by Steve and Paula. I actually use their podcast as a major resource, and it was very convenient for me to listen while, like, lifing, you know? I'll be sure to include a link to the episode that they did on Clara. And again, I want to thank Anna, who casually shared a post about her and started this whole thing. So I enjoyed learning about Clara.
Yeah, this is such a cool story, Jessica. I'm glad that we got to learn about Clara and her amazing work in the glass industry.
Yeah.
Totally. I love this pool of resources, too.
All right. So now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. So without further ado, drumroll please. And Anna Lindgren and Sophia Lagerquist.
Whee! Anna and Sophia.
Okay. So Anna and Sophia are the founders of Front Design, a design studio based out of Sweden. I have to say that they are a studio because their work is more than just light and furniture, okay? It's art. From the website, they described their work to be inspired by their fascination with magic. Looking at their work, you can definitely see the whimsy of it all.
Oh, that's so intriguing. Magic.
Also so fitting. We had a guy that disappeared on this episode. Now we have magic.
Mm. Yeah, nature, all of it. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. It all ties in. So the two of them work together from start to finish, collaborating from initial ideas to the finished product. The work of their firm, Front Design, reminds me of Claire because you can see how they draw inspiration from nature. What Anna and Sophia are doing is making it modern. And like I said, very whimsical. They have lights and retailers all over, including IKEA. So be sure to check that out.
Ooh, I can't wait to look up more of their light fixtures and the designs.
Me too. We can have them in our house.
Love that.
Yeah, if we have Clara's salary, but yeah, we can.
I can afford IKEA.
All right, before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid, along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family, tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website at shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SheBuildsPod. Until then,
see ya.
Bye.
Adios.
Gosh, I can't speak.
His family passed away.
Damn. The whole gamut.
His whole family.
Everybody.
They all died. They all done died.
Dead.
Okay. Woo. Should I just start over?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to
We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.